What you're about to witness is the drunkest two.
I was going to say, this is not the drunkest episode because this is part one of a double episode.
Yes. Of the two drunkest episodes of Goblet of Wine. And that's saying something. We've had obliterated episodes quite a few times.
Like
nothing.
This. We just for the first time checked over the audio file of what was recorded for this episode and both curled up in tiny little balls in fear.
Yeah. Moral of the story, don't try and keep up with indie folk stars. Yeah, we should try to keep up with people.
Let's provide some context because I don't know what past Hannah and Charlie provided.
I don't think we provided a lot because they were there.
Okay,
so the Flight are a band. All three of us, the entire thruple.
Neil's not here.
No, but
he's here in spirit.
Flight are a British indie band that we all absolutely love.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I have no context on the size of them outside of our love for them. But the last venue we went to see them was like a 6,000 person, 5,000, no, not that big, maybe 3,000 person sold out venue.
Yeah. It was, yeah, they're like of a good size and they are genuinely like one of the most talented bands in the space right now. They are absolutely
like top tier.
Incredible. Like, we love them a lot. Like, I was in their 0.5% of like top listeners on Spotify last year or something.
And for some reason, this band, which we love their music, agreed to come on the podcast.
Yes.
And me and Charlie, what you're about to witness is what happens when two people meet someone they look up to a lot, so therefore nervously drink beforehand, context we did that, and then try to keep up with two men with a lot higher tolerances than us. And even I am going to put a PSA out that don't drink as much. Like, no. Honestly, this was not healthy. Like, this worried me the next morning when I was like,
yeah. And for context, because I can't remember if we explained it in the episode, but basically, they kept tweeting about Harry Potter, and we kept sending it to, like, the Thruple group chat, being
I love Harry Potter!
This is random. So then, eventually, like, I think I tweeted them as a joke, like, ha, want to come on the podcast? And they just DM'd us, and we were like...
And then they just sent us their private email address, and we were like, cool, okay.
Yeah. So then this happened. So little thought went into this night because we were like, yeah, they requested beer and tequila. We were like, yeah, we're going to have some beer and tequila. And then somehow we ended up drinking beer, tequila and the 72% moonshine. And they just kept being like, yeah, have another shot. And we were like, this is Thursday. We got work in the morning, but just kept being like, yeah, another shot. I wasn't even registering that I was doing shots. I was just being passed a shot, doing a shot, drinking beer. Just picture that. Picture that situation and how surreal that would feel. And yeah, getting that drunk that you don't remember it and then having to edit and proof listen to it with essentially no idea what you said to one of your favourite bands. So I hope you all know the anxiety that we're feeling about having to actually proof listen to this. We hope that you enjoy it. This is something different. It's a genre of guests that we've not had before.
Yeah, so I hope you all
most of
enjoy
our guests
it.
Have either been people Podcasters. That we know or they've been like content creators in the Harry Potter space.
Yeah, so this is a little bit different. I hope you enjoy
an indie band.
All of their music that will be linked below, and they are honestly just such a fantastic band. Like, absolutely incredible.
If you like indie folky kind of stuff, it's amazing.
Yeah.
All right, you can tell this episode has been recorded on about 5 different occasions and many different bits, because here I am already voice noting into the intro to say, here are the new patrons we're welcoming to the Patreon team.
An XOXO Gossip Girl size thank you to Shia.
A Forks the Phoenix size thank you to Phoenix.
An Elizabeth Holmes size thank you to Elizabeth.
A Becky with the good hair size thank you to Becca, who is a new producer level patron.
An Ariana Grande size thank you to Adrian.
A Noodle size thank you to Nathaniel.
An Internet size thank you to Isa.
A Mallard size thank you to Mallory.
A Scissor Sister size thank you to Sean.
A Wisteria size thank you to Wes, who is a new producer level patron.
A
cat-sized thank you to Caro.
A jeweled-sized thank you to Jessie.
A gigolo-sized thank you to Jen, who has upgraded.
And a wind-in-the-willow-sized thank you to Winona.
But yeah, big thank you to the guys from Flight for coming on. I don't know why you did it. I hope you don't regret it too much. But you were a great time, and you're welcome back if for some bizarre reason you want to come back.
Goblet of wine. Two shots for everyone.
Yay.
Would you want the tequila or the moonshine first?
Definitely not the moonshine first.
Okay.
That's gonna...
a whole shot of moonshine is...
Cheers.
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 Okay.
Harry Potter.
Genuinely vile.
Goblet of wine.
Welcome back, everyone.
Hello.
You would have already heard us do the main intro because today we have some guests on.
Yeah. Do you guys want to introduce yourselves?
Yeah, go for it.
Hello, I'm Nick and...
I'm Will.
We are from a band called Flight and we're big Harry Potter fans.
Yay.
Good.
It's an honour.
Yeah, I'd like... No one can ever understand us apart because we just have typical...
Understand us. Oh, you're already drunk. Tell us
yes,
apart.
Yes, no, I already am. No, no one can tell us apart because we just have standard, slightly posh, like, southern accents. So I'm really glad that you guys kind of sound also vaguely similar. So no one will know.
No yeah. one will know.
I'm looking directly at you and I can't tell you apart right now.
Yeah,
that's fine. We look precisely the same as well. Do you guys want to tell us a little bit about the band Flight to start with? Just a little intro.
I haven't brought my bio.
Oh God, do you have it written down?
Well, I mean, Nick and I have. How far back do we go?
All the way.
Tell us your life story. Start from
when were you born?
Where were you conceived?
I was conceived. I don't know where I was.
No,
conceived.
No, that was a joke. Dial it forward.
I can text my dad.
Yes.
Yeah, find out right now.
Yeah, we'll get that knowledge revealed by the end of the podcast.
Yeah.
So we've been a band for a long time. You know, we put our first single out years ago now. Horribly long ago.
2014 or something.
Yeah.
Wow.
When we were touring with Bombay Bicycle Club around the UK, and that was scary. And we put out We Are the Rain. That was our first single. And then Light Me Up. That was our early indie pop time when we had just been signed. But then we sort of rejected all that and threw that off, and then made a record in Australia that we liked and it was quite ambitious and we spent a long time working on. It was called The Loved Ones. And then we did what did we do after that? I guess we kind of toured The Loved Ones for so long that we then forgot about, what's a plane? Go bog off. Yeah, so we were touring The Loved Ones and kind of becoming a bit of a, not a new band, but like becoming ourselves. That was around 2017, I'd say. And then we made an EP called White Roses with our friends, the Saves. And then I had a catastrophic breakup and we made...
I
this
didn't
is
need
really
to laugh at that, I'm really sorry.
It's funny.
It's because I went
Other
to the gig where you first like announced that and said that's what the songs were about.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I'm remembering. I didn't mean to just laugh at that, I'm really sorry.
She's laughing at your pain.
Yeah, that's fine. That's what the album was all about.
Yeah, we released that and then the pandemic kind of hit.
Yeah, and
well,
then
we released it during the pandemic, and then we started doing doorstep shows, and we did a doorstep gig at this very house,
at this very address,
which Hannah was really socially awkward and only told them yesterday. You asked for the address like 2 weeks ago, and I was like, how do I get into conversation? Like, if I just drop the address, will they remember it? Do I have to tell them they've already been here? Because they will remember when they get to the door.
I think for your listeners, we should explain. It was in the pandemic, so we couldn't perform our new record.
Yes, so you were going, which was an amazing idea, you were going round listeners' houses and performing.
There was a sort
at
of
people's...
a everyone put their name in and our record company just sort of at random took addresses.
Yeah, and me and Neil got
was
got
it
random...
at random, or were they like, let's pick some in the vicinity of each other?
I think they organised sort of South London one day and we did South London.
Yeah,
and that's,
yeah.
That would have been
good.
The day we came to see you.
Yeah.
But that was really lovely, and we even did a gig on Hampstead Heath with about 24 hours notice. We just put it online and said we'll be there in this spot, and everyone turned up. It was good. There was hundreds of people.
Yeah, it was amazing.
And
yeah.
It's just because everyone was starved of anything to be able to do.
Anything happy.
Yeah. And we had not prepared like for a turnout of any kind. We just had this tiny little speaker. I don't think we were heard. It was a bit like in Life of Brian when doing the Sermon on the Mount, and it just zooms back a little bit and no one can hear what he's saying.
Yeah.
we just made a couple of days ago. We just finished making a new album.
Okay, this is just Hannah voice noting in almost immediately just to bridge over a gap that's about to come up here where it feels like we jump really randomly between topics. This is just a section I cut out of the audio where we were explaining to Flight about the podcast. But you guys don't need to hear that because if you're on episode 93, I think you know all about the podcast. So this then jumps back into talking about Harry Potter. So we go from talking about Flight to talking about Harry Potter, but I cut like 10 minutes of me and Charlie talking about the podcast to them out. So that's just explaining this little jump. Here.
The thing is, once you start picking holes in Potter, you do start noticing.
You unravel
if you're super. I mean,
yeah,
if you're skimming, no holes.
No, yeah.
But once you get under the skin, there are some holes.
But yeah. Again, that's kind of the concept of the podcast is that we're coming back to it as adults, just like we love this thing because it meant a lot to us growing up. But holy fuck, it's shit.
Yeah.
Like I love it, but like it's so badly written. And don't care.
But I think that's a big part of why we retrospectively love it.
Mm, yeah, because and, it's that nostalgia of it.
Just to veer away for a second to the Lord of the Rings films, and I am a fan of the books, but the way I see it is the books for Harry Potter and the films for Lord of the Rings.
I like the iconic things.
The things that mean a great deal to me and Nick. Those films are, in one sense, absolutely magnificent. Feats of engineering and brilliant films.
Are we talking about Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings?
Lord of the Rings. I would never say
not
that.
Harry Potter. Yeah.
I just want to confirm which film franchise we're talking about. Lord of the Rings.
But then the things that make me go back over and over and over again to the Lord of the Rings films is Viggo Mortensen's varying accents, the extraordinary line deliveries from random people, the kind of occasional random acts of CGI sort of madness.
What is the "May the Lord of the Black Land come forth"? Incredible.
And it's the same with the books. I think going back to them, I just love how clunky her writing is sometimes. It's so endearing.
But it's not frilly. It's not good. But it's simple storytelling, and she does it like it's for children.
It's for children. It's also bordering on Hemingway, just how.
Yeah, how just
how stark it is.
Yeah, there's no metaphor, and when sometimes the very, very occasional time where she does go into something else, it's like it sticks out like, ooh, don't. She
tries out a similar.
And I think people can say there's like something that the writing is simplistic, but the fact of how many children it got into reading is just like an amazing feat within itself.
Yeah,
and it's just the best, one of the best stories ever told. Isn't
it? Yeah.
No, it really is. It's incredible.
On that note, can I say something that will make you guys hate me? Just
I'm
to get
veer
it off
into the actual
note.
Topic.
I hate Lord of the Rings. Okay. However, I love The Hobbit. This is wrong.
The films,
and the book.
Well, the book is fantastic.
The films are a little poopoo.
Yeah.
In my defence, there's a lot hotter men in the films of The Hobbit than
I don't want to have this conversation with you.
hotter than Bloom, Mortensen. Others.
But I know that this is like an incredibly controversial take, but I think it's because
one of your worst takes, and you have a lot of bad takes.
Well, there's many. But like, I think it's because I've read The Hobbit and I've not read Lord of the Rings, so I watched the Lord of the Rings films, and I'm a bit like, okay.
Yeah, no, you're chipping
there's
away.
There's no women, and I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, but when there is a woman, their presence is felt. I mean, Arwen, when she first walks in with the light behind her and she heals his wound and then gets her on the horse and then makes the wraiths wash away with the horse water.
Hi, welcome to Goblet of Wine, the Lord of the Rings podcast.
I'm aware. Yeah. Like,
it's good.
I want to read Lord of the Rings because I'm sure I would then have a newfound appreciation of the films. But right now, having not read Lord of the Rings, I watch the films and I'm like, the short men are walking again.
Yeah, sure. Can I just move within that vein back to the world of Potts?
You're trying to move our tangents back to Potter. This is impressive how badly off tangent we've gone.
Can I just make one thing stated clearly? That the books meant more to me than anything ever at the time they were out.
Yes.
And I guess when did the first film come out? It was like the third book maybe had come out, maybe the fourth
was
about to come out.
It was 2001.
Yeah, I can rely on you for all stats, can't I?
You can, yes.
This is amazing.
But not me, huh?
Okay, so the first film came out around that time, the third or fourth book.
Yeah.
So already in so deep.
So deep. There's no getting out.
And a bunch of me and my friends went to see the film together, about six or seven of us, all equally as obsessed with the books. And our thing was, well, films are so much better than books. Films are amazing.
Yikes.
Films are incredible.
What a take.
Like, and books, this is us at 10 years old or whatever, you know.
You just discovered the video camera.
Yeah. Well, we just, you know, I was a huge film fan at that point already. And it was really the only book I was reading at that time. So I was like, this is going to be incredible, this film. This is like, the books are this good. So the film
is going to be this good.
And we were all, I've never been more excited for anything in my entire life. And we sat and we watched the whole thing in complete silence without looking at each other at all, just watching it, just transfixed. And then we walked out the cinema, and in the car park outside the cinema, we were kind of like, so what did you think? And two or maybe even three of our party just cried.
Actual
tears, because they were so disappointed.
Oh, that's
and wait,
sad.
This is not the first one.
Which is really magical and heartwarming.
Yeah, because like...
And bad.
Yeah, but like...
Magically heartwarmingly bad.
So, yeah, but retrospectively, I could now go back and watch them, and it would be a lovely,
yeah,
warm,
no,
Richard Curtis-y hug.
Yeah. You're drunk, it's Christmas.
Yeah.
Like,
it's always Christmas when it comes on.
Yeah, it is.
But from that moment on, I never then watched the films.
Oh, wow.
Wait, so you've never seen a film?
I've seen the third one and the first one.
Are you joking right now?
Wow.
How have you lived this much of your life without... Because they're on all the time.
I mean, I've caught the odd one here and there, but I've never actively
or
properly watched.
I would pay good money to, like, sit down and just watch you watch
the
fourth. Like, just the fourth in particular.
The fourth is an experience in patience.
And sanity and sexism.
Yeah. I think that leads us on to...
Yes.
Like,
so the first question we normally ask guests.
But I want to ask, like, you've basically answered it, but what are your appearance?
What are my appearances?
Wow, your
opinion on
the films.
Well, the question we normally ask guests is, how did you get into Harry Potter and what are your kind of, like,
how
do you interact with it now?
Specifically, I want to now know about the films.
Yeah, how do you feel about the films?
The films... I think of garbage, hot trash.
Yeah.
I love the books more than anything ever. I started reading them. I read them all hundreds of times. And then I went through a lull sort of my early 20s where I just kind of like left that behind me. And then suddenly I started listening to Stephen Fry reading the audiobooks.
Oh, yeah.
And then I started listening to them at night before going to sleep. And then now
what we do, not together, just to
stop making
not together.
It's funny.
In your thruple. And then I literally almost every night listen to the audiobooks to put me to bed because I can't sleep now unless I have Stephen Fry lulling me off to bed.
Same. No, same.
Yeah,
my entire
life
I've fallen asleep to the
Stephen
Fry's.
Wow.
His voice.
I didn't
realise
we'd replicate the two of us and put them in the room. The listeners are going to be like, you need to get guests that were different to you.
That leads us quite well into, you know, how did you guys discover the books?
Yeah,
like,
how did you get into
journey?
Harry Potter? One day we will start talking about the chapter.
Can I have another beer?
What are we shotting now?
Tequila.
Again?
Yeah.
Oh my god, I'm going to die.
Oh, you'll be fine.
We're going to die. We're talking about Potter. Round two.
Charles.
Okay.
Oh.
Gone down the wrong way.
So I
Harry Potter and the Goblet of Wine.
So we have three questions that we ask guests.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask you to quickfire them based on how much pre-conversation we've done.
No, fuck that.
That we've covered a lot of it.
Okay.
How did you get into Potter?
Yeah.
What is your Hogwarts house? And then together tell us what we're drinking today.
I got into Potter through a very inspiring primary school teacher. My Hogwarts house is... Gryffindor.
Yes!
Although secretly Will thinks I'm a Hufflepuff. And what was the last one? What are we drinking today? I'm drinking Desperados with some tequila.
Yeah.
And I'm already
quite
buzzing.
You guys said any bottled beer and also tequila. And then at the last minute you said pints of Baileys.
From touring around America, we discovered that kind of culture of you get a, instead of doing it in the English way of, which we still do, but pints of beer.
Yeah.
Lots of them. Which is just such a... Oh, it's just such a lot to carry. and then the thing in America seemed to be wherever we went, you know, not pints, either a small glass or like a bottle of beer.
Sure.
Mm. And then a shot of tequila. And it sort of gets you into a
slightly... their beer is watery as fuck. So it's like, hydration. Yeah. I'm actually sobering up.
Depends.
So between each bottle, you have a shot.
Yeah.
That would definitely get you drunk.
Oh, yeah. God. It's like, it's pretty instantaneous.
And their tequila is much nicer. I got into Pollock because my mum bought me for Christmas or a birthday the first book, which I still have, and it's the first edition.
Of the first book?
Yeah, I think so. And
you
then,
could be a very rich man if you sold that.
Do you reckon? I'm not. Maybe it's not a first edition. No, it can't be because it had already won the Smarty Prize.
No, it's not first edition.
But sorry, my cousin has the first edition. And that was the one we initially read. But
have you considered robbing him? Or her?
Her, yeah.
Or them?
I consider robbing her all the time.
You are a musician, so.
Yeah, exactly.
What's that got to do? Okay, yeah. Move on.
We're just dirty run scoundrels.
Oh, right. Yeah. No, I was more you've got to make a living somehow, but that was a very sarcastic joke.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Don't got to the core offend of our heart. The guests. Do you remember when we talk about guest etiquette?
So, yeah, I mean, she got me the book because she was like, it won the Smarties Award. It must be good.
I swear that's like most people's experience. Like, it won the award and then something.
Yeah, yeah, and it was, I don't even know, when was the first book?
1997. In the first episode of this podcast, I said 94, and I've never lived it down because I can't edit it out because it just exists.
But, like, it's quite funny because now the thing with podcasting is people just listen, like, chronologically, at least because we go.
So once a week we get tweets like, you said the date wrong, and I'm like, I know that now. So,
what house are you, Will?
Will's house is, well, my Pottermore was Gryffindor, but...
But Pottermore is bollocks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I would like to give you this analogy.
Okay. Please do.
I like to equate the, or match, if you will, the four houses with the four Beatles.
Neil!
This is how we summon him.
The way I think of the houses and how they're made manifest in people, how they like to do, because I think it's often unhelpful how the books portray the houses, because Slytherin is just the bad one and Hufflepuff's the kind of crap one and etc. So I like to kind of throw, which has been nicely parried by J.K. Rowling when she was saying Hufflepuff was her favourite.
Yeah, Hufflepuff the stone.
The stone,
but no, she did say they were her favourite, and they were like,
which I do also think was a little bit of like damage control after so many people got Hufflepuff.
She was like, seven books, like, they're my favourite.
But anyway, I think it's more helpful to just equate them with the four Beatles.
Who do you equate to which one?
So
here we go.
Which one is the sex offender? Oh, they're all. Sorry.
Nice. Sick man. Yeah.
I think Gryffindor has to be Paul, because Paul is sort of the
so brave,
the front runner in a way, and he's the most prolific of the band, and he kind of held it together. He's a bit self righteous, and he's a bit like, yeah, I'm the best one.
He didn't know it.
And he's the kind of yin to the yang, obviously, of Lennon. Mm-hmm. Lennon therefore has to be Slytherin.
Lennon has to be Slytherin. It kind of has to be.
And then, really, Ravenclaw is a great match for George.
Yeah,
because
you're giving Ringo the Hufflepuff. Of course.
No, but this tracks. This makes total sense.
Yeah, I defy you to rearrange.
But John has got the darkness.
He's
of
the dark
Slytherin.
Side.
Because
he was hit Cynthia.
Yeah,
he was a bit of a nasty bastard.
Exactly. Yeah. Fully agree. That's how I would have. The second you said it, I was thinking which way.
Ringo. Everyone loves Ringo. Ringo's also underrated and much loved. And
he's
the
backbone. He's the spine. He's the spine of the Beatles. Hufflepuff is the spine of Hogwarts.
That's a good point. I agree.
Textbook Hufflepuff.
And enigmatic, cool, bookish, clever, just a bit sexy Ravenclaw for George.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember. Did you say what one you are? I don't think you did.
Well, I guess I have to stick with Gryffindor.
I am 3-1 for the first time in my life!
With Slytherin! Sorry, I wanted to say the geekiest thing I could possibly say.
Down with
Slugs, Malfoy!
While Will's away, what's a good pop round? Like, Because I like Slytherins. I really like Slytherins. In fact, I have a soft spot for Draco Malfoy. He has got the best sick burns in the whole of the
film. Does he?
He's got some sick burns.
No, he doesn't. His insults are the worst.
His insults are awesome.
Your mum's like fat and your poor.
Yeah.
Scarhead.
That's how awesome is that?
What I've ever heard.
It's so good.
Training for the ballet. What does that mean? Fuck off, mate.
Scarhead. I'm sorry. Scarhead. Like,
no, they're great. What's the one he says when he sees the blast and the Scroots? Or flubberworms for the first time, he says, what are they? What is the point of them? Which I always thought was such a good one, such a good burn. It's just like, and Hagrid's like, that's for next lesson. Which I thought he outwitted Hagrid
But when
in
he's just
burn.
Like, your mum's fat three times over,
and
like,
you're just like, ooh, J.K. Rowling, do you want to call it on the fat phobia?
No. That's true. Yeah, no, it's not for the modern, not for the modern day like burns.
Speaking of which, let's get into chapter 5. Not for modern audiences.
And it's like, let us actually start on 46 the chapter.
6 minutes into this recording, let me start on an excess.
And
of
the problem
phlegm.
Is, you can't cut out any of the intro because it's all gold.
It's all gold. I'm really sorry, as the one that's pulling the notes together, I need a wee. So
okay.
Does that mean we should do another shot while she's gone? Do we want to try the moonshine?
Oh.
Well, you can't even do it without me. No, we'll pour you one. You do it afterwards.
Well, I could have a dribble of moonshine. I could have a dribble of moonshine. Harry Potter.
I know we're gonna release this as like unreleased flight music.
Yeah. Well, do a Potter song. Good. Do an original.
How about Harry Potter?
Just write something on the spot.
Yeah. They're composing a wizard. I'm videoing
Voldemort.
No,
sweet lady Voldemort.
Okay, wait. You're dropping your phone. Oh my god, the fucking microphone's come off.
It really is a drunk podcast.
No, we have actual episodes.
This really is a drunk podcast.
Dobby is a lovely little house.
Dobby is
a lovely little house elf. Slave. that's what we call it. Mother goblet of wine. Gonna get a million listens while we're doing this podcast. Sweet. Are we gonna get started any fucking time at all with
okay,
this podcast?
Sit down.
Should we try and record a hook for you guys, like a goblet of wine or something like that?
Goblet of wine.
That's okay. Okay.
Goblet of wine.
Let's do it again. That was actually
okay. So,
goblet of wine.
Do we have permission to use that in anything that we want?
We're pretty cheap.
Tangent after tangent. The listeners losing their patience. I'm so sorry, anyone who tuned in to hear us talking about anything. Talking about
of any
shit.
Particular interest.
We're fucking drunk. But we've already had 4 shots of tequila. And we've never even started talking about the chapters. This is good.
This is a breakdown feels
and then,
like.
Goblet of wine. Goblet of wine.
Right, so you're playing this on the next tour.
Okay. An excess of phlegm. An excess of phlegm. Did anyone ever
learn how to say
that
as a child? Yes.
Yeah, because my partner thought it was excess of phlegm. And I thought it was excess of phlegm, but then before her, I learnt that it was excess of phlegm.
I remember asking my mum what this word meant.
Yeah.
And this is a vivid memory of mine.
How do you not know it from Friends when she's like, oh, I've got my sexy phlegm?
But it's because you've never seen it written down.
You've written
you?
Down.
Yeah, that's true.
The thing, because it's so different written down, because there's a G, there's an M, they're all in the fucking wrong order.
I couldn't read shit, so, you know, I was just like, sorry, I was just like, what a word.
What a word.
How do I spell cat?
What is word?
Oh, I had a poor friend at school called, Rachel, and she pronounced it Hermione.
That my dad did that.
Most,
yeah,
I think most people did because no one knows anyone
but
called
Hermione.
She got
really badly bullied. I mean, she was called Hermione for like a couple of years.
But I called her Hermione.
My dad called it Hermione.
Yeah.
Your poor friend.
Yeah. No, I was on her side.
Yeah.
So there's a knock on the Burrow door, and Molly says that she isn't expecting. So Harry and Dumbledore arrive at the Burrow. We're leading on. This
they
chapter leads
that
straight on for the next
moment in the
broom shed, which is a totally normal place to take an underage child.
We were like, this is a safeguarding issue.
But that's where he starts becoming his father figure.
Yeah,
and that's
Harry's
think that's,
like, I've lost
think
father
pervy.
Figure number three, so I need you.
You need a new one. I've got to tap in.
If I may interject quickly, what I loved about this book at the time. Was how it was suddenly Dumbledore and Harry, because I'd always been yearning for Harry and Dumbledore.
Yeah.
For Dumbledore to not basically blank Harry and be really cryptic and mean the whole time. Even on the cover, it's the two of them together.
Yeah, we did
it's
literally.
Like, oh my god!
Yeah, because Dumbledore's the best character in the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like,
but I did just realize.
And
we missed the question. Your favourite books. We missed this somehow.
Oh,
God, yes.
Yeah.
Sorry,
one,
what's your
favourite?
Okay.
But Prince is the best by like a country mile, in my opinion.
Amazing.
But we've had, I think in other interviews, we've had debates about this.
Yeah, I mean,
it is
Prince,
hard.
Prince is just the best.
Not for me.
Okay.
So not what is?
A man of standards.
Goblet.
Yes.
Yeah,
high five.
You know what I love about 6 and 3? And I think what makes them my favourite two books is that you don't get the big chunky Voldemort thing at the end.
Mm.
It's just fun.
Throughout.
Adventure stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't get the like, Voldemort's waiting. It's also really convenient that Voldemort waits to the end of the year. Every time. Because, make sure he gets all his nice grades and then I'm going to attack him.
Do you know what brings this one down for me, which is such a me thing, is how long Ron and Hermione have fallen out for, because I am such a Ron and Hermione fan.
He's the biggest Ron and
Hermione. That is the sad bit. Those are the chapters that I often skip over. Yeah, it is a bit of a downer. But they come back stronger than
they
ever.
They do.
But also, I'm going to be controversial and say, as much as I know that the second book is kind of filler, I kind of love it for how much it sets up.
I love the second book.
It sets up so much.
Like, we finished it like...
foreshadowing in that book is absolutely insane. So I understand how it feels filler, because it fucking is. Because it sets up like the entire seventh book.
Yeah.
Essentially. So yeah, I kind of love
it. I love
the
second book.
Yeah.
I love every single one of the books.
I love every single one of the books. Talking about... going back to the Ron and Hermione relationship.
Please do.
And
I will never start this chapter
and I don't care. But I'm trying to tie it into the chapter.
You don't have to, it's fine.
No, it's fine.
No, but I am, but I literally was, because I was listening to the chapter that I'm drunk, and we just had moonshine. I was listening to the chapter last night, Stephen Fry giving me some good ear candy. I don't know, whatever.
ASMR.
But it's the first time, I think, really, where Ron and Hermione... are together when he comes, because he arrives and Hermione's already there.
Yeah, true.
They've already had this time and they're looking at each other like trying to suss out like what's he going to be like with Sirius. And I thought that's always an interesting thing, because they're a bit like that in the fifth book, but...
So we discussed how they do actually do that in the last two chapters of the fifth book, and it's quite well set up because they were so badly injured at the end of the fifth that they kind of came to the realisation that they are going to become injured or die for Harry.
Exactly.
And they know that. So they are bonded by that. So when the sixth book starts, they are already bonded by that and already talking about Harry and already having these conversations.
And it's so nice to allude to those private conversations that
they're
having. And it makes you think. And that's good. Yeah. That is good writing.
It is fantastic writing, the way she's like, they're having eye contact without conversation.
Exactly.
Because we know they're having those conversations.
They are... Yeah, as you said, just they have realized this humongous thing.
Yeah.
They're up for it. They're going to die by his side.
Yeah.
And Nick and I were a bit miffed about how it's like, oh, we're going to do this chapter. Okay. there's better chapters in the book. It's
next you can come
book.
Back.
And we'll come back and cover the one you wanted, Voldemort's
chapter 22.
We are. We need to ask you about this. We are so fascinated by we have so many questions.
Okay, so like but, you can come back for that because we're just like, why?
Why is that my favorite chapter? Because that's
no. You can come back.
We'll get to that. But actually, I was revisiting this chapter. I got the book out and I did the audiobook chapter this morning as well. And it's got one of the most wonderful moments in the entire thing, which is Harry going, you know what? I've just found out that they weren't going to sack it off.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
With me. And he goes, no matter what happens to me, no matter what goes on or how fucked everything is, I feel good inside because I know those two are going to stick by my
yeah,
side.
When he says, when
it's
he
the
says,
most moving
like,
moment maybe of the entire
yeah,
no, it's
incredible
ever.
That moment.
It is.
And what does he say? Like,
and that's
he's,
in this
the
chapter.
Warmth.
So let's
he says,
give
he says like the
less
warmth.
Hard time.
I can't remember exactly how it's put, but it's like the warmth of just like suddenly the feeling coming back because he just has them near him in the on the bed and they're just like fussing over it and it's just like it's making me feel.
No, I was
making me feel
I got quite teary this morning.
Yeah, it's a beautiful moment.
I was just like lying in bed. Just like with the headphones in, I was just listening to the chapter, and I had an actual Hollywood single role.
I think it's the fact that he was still. I'm skipping around. I'm sorry, guys. I think it's the fact that he was still shocked over the fact that they would support him in that way that made me really emotional. I absolutely agree. It's one of the most moving parts of the book because, however long it's been, 5 years now of him actually having friends and actually having a found family and him having these people that care for him, he's still shocked over people that want to love him.
That's what makes this book so good is that it bridges the gap between the teenage and the adult.
It
and that's
does.
Where it really starts turning because we grew up with these, we grew up with these books kind of as at the same age. And so for it suddenly to get to this point where it was starting to become, the themes were becoming much more adult. And it was, and that was, this is a special moment. He's re-met with his friends and he's, and the book, the chapter is a setup chapter.
Yeah.
It's like the chapter is like he's been put back into the wizarding world after being with auntie and uncle for 6 weeks or whatever.
Mm.
And to finally see his friends again and that's such an adult theme to
it
touch
is.
On.
And it used to give me huge anxiety. I remember reading in the book at the time vividly the clock. What would it say that they were in imminent
mortal peril.
That gave me huge anxiety. And obviously it's quite funny. This clock is saying mortal peril, and then but then Arthur's traveling for a bit.
And then
he's back into mortal peril.
But it reminds me a lot of having your work email on when you're like out of hours.
Yeah, it's still mortal peril.
You're still any time it's on, you're like, doom is imminent.
But I'm on the tube now, so I can't answer. Ha ha.
But then back
but
into
even
mortal
that's
peril.
A bit more of a more advanced joke, isn't it?
Well, exactly. You have a genuine build up of anxiety around this point, reading these books, and you are feeling a bit adult and grown up.
Yeah,
you're 15, 16.
And it's like mortal peril is around every corner when you're that age.
Yeah,
and you know, and to have that little click moment with Harry at that point, to go. Oh, they're in it with me, though.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's all good.
And on that note, this chapter is so much more horny than anything else we've ever read.
We
will make the slightest thing horny.
We don't have to. We don't have to for the first time.
But I'm saying I will in general make anything horny, but I don't have to. I have not a single horny note in this entire chapter because it's right there in the text.
It's right there in text.
You don't need to, it's horny for itself.
They arrive at the Burrow. Molly says she wasn't expecting them till morning, which, like, why?
Tonks is there and she looks fucking miserable.
Okay, but why wasn't Molly expecting them till morning? How long were they going to take with Slughorn? Till 6 o'clock?
Yeah.
What kind of thruple were they sort of engaging with?
Now
we're not getting it. What kind of tricks was Harry going to have to...
Slughorn?
Yeah. Ooh. Do you think it's vaguely implied that Slughorn was a bit diddly?
Like this, okay. So we
okay,
had this,
so we had this discussion.
We had
last
this
episode.
Conversation last episode in okay. that, like, Slughorn is very clearly like queer coded in that he was wearing like
lilac silk pajamas with a maroon velvet dressing gown.
But also like,
and he had his favorite
with his crystal
pineapple.
Also,
and
he called Lily
vivacious.
Mm. Yeah, but like J.K. Rowling in general has this really nasty habit of like, one, okay, there's two ways that you can tell if someone is like a villain in Harry Potter. One, they're queer coded in that they seem a bit, you know.
But Snowball's not a villain, is he?
But he's very grey.
He's the most grey out of all of them.
He's the most grey out of all of them, which just makes him kind of interesting.
No, he's the best. He's one of my favourite characters. He's a brilliant character. But like either they're queer coded and or they're like unattractive.
Right.
So okay. J.K. Rowling opens on this character of Slughorn as this like fat, unattractive, middle-aged, queer coded man. And you immediately know that he's going to be morally grey.
Where's the queer coding in the description in that?
The lilac pajamas and the...
Yeah, and the general way that he's very like precious about like having his like very specific things, but this runs throughout Harry Potter in general. And I say this as like a queer person, where it's like, you know, the Umbridge is described as like very masculine and unattractive. Yeah. Voldemort is described as very like feminine. In fact, the only person that we have in the entire series that kind of breaks this rule of like queer coded unattractiveness being equated to being evil is Hagrid.
Good.
Mm.
And, you know, people can say, yes, this is the exception that makes the rule. I have my own theories about whether Hagrid the entire time was intended to be evil and was changed at the last minute. But yeah, Hagrid is the kind of only exception. Normally when you have a character that is described as unattractive or queer-coded, they're normally evil. But yeah, so we open on Slughand.
I'd never thought about it that way. That's wow.
It's pretty like...
That's pretty okay.
When you realise it, I
must say the Hagrid thing, I don't know about that. I don't know if the Hagrid seems like a pretty like...
That's quite a rogue call to say he would have maybe been intended to be evil.
To be evil, yeah. Because he doesn't fit that rule. I don't know if she'd done that intentionally.
Yeah, we have like an entire season 8 planned where we're discussing separate things, and one of them I want to discuss an entire thing on Hagrid, because as much as it breaks my heart, I do kind of think that she got at least halfway through intending Hagrid to be a bad guy.
Halfway through the series?
Yes.
Why?
Because of a lot of the ways that, one, he's coded in terms of sexuality and also in terms of appearance, like... Literally any other bad guy we have is like they were unattractive and they were like they kind of deviated from their gender.
That's maybe also a little pattern seeking though.
Because yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Because Tom Riddle is supposed to be an incredibly attractive boy.
But also there's like a lot of feminine things that also like attributed to Voldemort, like...
Oh right, I see.
Feminine things around like the way he spoke, like the kind of structure of his face, things like that. But absolutely. And this, he could be the exception that breaks rule, but also I'm kind of like, this is like tangenting into a whole other thing, but the thing that we have throughout the Harry Potter series is this really built up thing about James Potter experienced this massive betrayal with Peter Pettigrew.
Mm.
And we kind of have it built up that, you know, this is what James went through. Harry is also going to go through like a similar level betrayal. And then it gets to the 7th book and it's like it's kind of wimped out of like he doesn't get betrayed. Like all through the books we kind of have this echoing thing of like James was betrayed, Harry's going to get betrayed.
By he's Ron, on the same...
But I think Hagrid.
Oh, so, I see. You know, because Hagrid the entire way...
Well, Hagrid was the accidental antagonist of book one, in the way that he was the one that accidentally told Voldemort.
There's so many times that Hagrid accidentally lets information slip, and he's, you know, he's coded as queer like unattractively. So like there's certain theories online and there's kind of like a compiled list of evidence that at some point Hagrid was going to be the one to portray Harry, and then probably, I reckon, around book 6, I reckon J.K. Rowling lost her nerve and was like, I can't do it.
But she had it all figured out, though.
She had the Horcruxes figured out, definitely, but I don't feel that she had everything.
But even it's down to the fact, like, Hagrid was the one that carried him to Voldemort at
which
the
is
end.
A beautiful parallel. It's really incredible.
It's beautiful, but I don't know whether that was maybe originally planned and then got right to the end of it and she was like, I can't do it. I cannot.
Well, yeah, I mean, thank God she didn't.
Yeah.
That would suck.
Yeah,
it'd be awful.
Trust me, when I say terrible. That it's my theory, I don't want it. I want Voldemort to be hurt. I want Hagrid, sorry, not Voldemort, Jesus Christ.
But isn't the parallel that Hagrid carries
Harry's supposedly dead body.
The same way he carried the baby. Yeah, like, it's a beautiful parallel.
Yeah, I absolutely see that. But also,
you already said that, didn't you? Just like... Kind of
we've said it, but she's said it. Like, it's just a really beautiful parallel.
Like, yeah. So, like, trust me when I say I don't want this to be real. I don't. But also, I can completely see the way that every other queer-coded and, like, and I say this, like, unattractive character is, you know, typically a villain. And this goes to JK's, like, modern disgusting politics. But I just think that it kind of carries through in the theme of Hagrid is the one that defies this.
Sure.
And it kind of carries through. But yeah, this kind of goes back to the original point of Slughorn, is that he is coded as queer and coded as this, like, unattractive man. So we immediately know, before we know anything about him, he's this unattractive queer guy. So we can, you know, given everything else she's written, we're like, okay, this is a morally gay, grey character, and it's disgusting. It shouldn't be written that way, but it is.
But I think... this is why Slughorn is one of both of our favourite characters.
Yeah, because he's brilliant.
Because in previous books to this, characters are either good or bad. Regis Peter is bad. Totally. Umbridge is bad.
And you never know till... I mean, but you. I guess you do find out at the end that Slughorn is actually good. Well, good,
but even
he comes
at this,
back to fight.
But
he
even at this point, you know he's good. He's not on Voldemort's side.
No, he isn't.
Yeah.
And
but isn't that it's good to have a grey character?
It is. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
And that's why he's one of our favourite characters.
Yeah. Exactly.
He's,
but like,
he's
also
incredible.
Dumbledore is incredibly gay. I meant to say grey and it came out as gay, but either same difference, but like, yeah, he's also like, Dumbledore is a morally grey character who is also a gay character, like JK Rowling.
Would you say that Dumbledore's morally grey?
Yes! Oh my god, have you read the books?
But he's like the shining force of, like,
until
love.
He's not.
Until he's
until he raises
say, like,
Harry for
Harry
a pig to slaughter.
Yeah, but ultimately, he's the Aslan, he's the Jesus,
he's the Gandalf.
Gray characters, isn't
Gandalf
Gandalf grey and isn't Aslan grey? Like,
yeah.
Well, isn't Jesus, isn't God grey?
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
But that can't we say that Dumbledore saw far enough ahead, played the chessboard well enough that he knew that Harry was going
to
win?
Yeah, but it goes down to the whole, what is
great
it?
Great good.
No, but the like, is it like the tram line things where it's like either it will hit someone or it will hit three people if you like push the thing?
Sure.
Which has admittedly just been debunked by like train drivers being like, just swap the thing halfway through and it will hit neither of them.
Sure, yeah.
But like,
of course you know that. Please, Kat. Please don't. Okay, carry on with the tram analogy.
I love trains. No, but like... It's that choice, isn't it? It's for the greater good. That's what makes a morally grey character, is it's the choice between the greater
I would just
good.
Say, is this just quite an extreme to call him morally grey?
Do you not think that Dumbledore's morally grey? He takes this literal child, this baby, that he dumps on a doorstep with no more than a letter, not even a face-to-face conversation, just like, okay, you've got to raise him so that he can die at the right time.
I think you're being pinnicky with the detail there. I think because I think ultimately on paper he's the good guy.
I think that he's the good guy on the first reading and not on the second.
Okay.
I do agree that he is the ultimate good guy, and without him, Harry wouldn't have defeated
Exactly,
Voldemort.
That's the thing.
This
that's
is the
Gandalf
thing. Harry
like...
is so good, he wouldn't have defeated Voldemort, because Harry cannot stand for anyone to die, and we learn through the books that is not the right standpoint, because if you allow no one to die, then evil wins.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, we have Dumbledore, who we've talked about in the last few chapters. Basically, there's this moment where... it's basically implied in the text that he allows, like, Emmeline Vance to die.
Yeah.
And he very clearly ropes Ron and Hermione in to the whole thing, knowing that they might die, because they are the backups if Harry dies.
Of course.
And that's fine, because that means that Voldemort can die, and he's allowed those backups. But that makes him morally grey in the way that he is allowing these innocent, brackets, people to die. But that counteracts Harry's thing. This is where the whole thing
is
like sinking.
Harry's the grey one, isn't he?
Harry's the most grey one. Harry's the most grey one in the way he says that he's like, people are dying for me. And it's like, no, bitch. People are dying because they have their own personal beef.
Dumbledore's only doing everything to defeat Voldemort. Like you say, for the greater... I mean, obviously for the greater good in this context, is loaded because of book seven, of book seven and all that shit. But it is literally for the, you know, for the defeat of Voldemort. He's not doing it to endanger Harry. He's doing it because he knows that Harry's made this choice. I mean, yeah. Dumbledore hasn't made this choice.
But it's
for
the
Harry.
Other people he's putting in danger. But that's why we love Dumbledore. Even though we think he's Morally Grey,
of course, because
he's
the chess master. He's Gandalf. He's the guy who's
because Harry would have never
pieces.
Have done it without him.
It's God and the devil.
Yeah,
it's basically exactly that. It's exactly that. It's God and the devil.
Yeah,
it's
and when you say that God was Morally Grey,
yes,
against the devil.
Exactly. Yeah, he is.
Okay. Well, then, but that comes down to semantics, then, I suppose, because in essence, God is good and the devil is bad.
Because Harry is implied to be the all good because he won't allow anyone to die. But at the end of the day, that might be bad because in allowing no one person to die, he allows multiple people to
but
die.
But Harry's also got darkness in him as well. Has darkness in it. That's the whole point of the saga,
yeah,
isn't
yeah.
it? But it's Harry fighting... It's Luke Skywalker. It's the Harry fighting the dark side and Harry fighting, you know, it's about the light side and the dark side.
And
he
the light and the dark within him.
Exactly. He has both of them within him.
So Tonks is here and she's sad.
Yeah, she's miserable as fuck.
Because she loves the loops.
And you can tell she's sad because she has mousy hair.
But like, honestly, I hate this storyline so much. It's like one that we have.
Women are depressed when they don't
but
dye
like,
their hair.
I know, but like, yeah, because like, if anything, when I'm depressed, I do dye my hair. But like, I don't know, it's just the concept of like Tonks, who is just this fantastic character.
It's also so out of left field.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so
it's like the whole like Lupin Tonks love story is just like you don't hear a fucking word about it until you just have Tonks, this brilliant character, being depressed as fuck about it. And it's just like...
You're right, it's very lazily written, that bit.
It is so lazily written.
It's just like repeatedly added in there as like, oh, is she depressed about her cousin dying?
In fact,
she's depressed about the dick that she isn't getting. Like,
yeah, in fact, during this whole book, she's it's a badly written bit.
It's a really badly written bit. Yeah. And the only real backstory that you get for Tonks is just about her like pining after some man. And it's just like, she's more
it's
than
a really
this.
Badly
and
written
Steve,
bit.
To go to the audiobook version, Stephen Fry's... dowdy northern accent he gives her.
Watch her, Harry.
She's just downtrodden and northern. And sad and
God
northern.
God forbid someone be northern is what you're saying.
Yeah. It just feels very like, okay, she's,
She's sad now.
One dimensional.
The mousy hair and the northern accent.
Yeah. So because she doesn't want to depress everyone else, she leaves. So Harry then sits down. Crookshanks arrives, which tells us that Hermione is there. I was going to explain the context. We multiple times have brought up the fact that Hermione is where she needs to be for plot reasons, not for the fact that she actually has parents who apparently love her reasons. Yeah. It has canonically been 2 weeks.
It's really frustrating. It's been, at this point, she's already been there a couple of days. Therefore, she's gotten a week and a half into her summer holidays.
And been like, bye, Mum and Dad,
she doesn't
meet.
She doesn't see her parents the entire year.
But I think her parents know what time it is at this point. You know.
I don't think she do. I think she do.
I think she do. I think she's explained to her parents, you know, stuff's going down right now.
I think the opposite.
And they need to be in the wizarding world.
She's lying to them at this point.
Okay.
And when she goes home for the 2 weeks at Christmas in this book, that's when she finally tells them the truth.
Ooh,
so nice. I think at this point she's just continuously lying to them, continuously lying and saying like, I just need to go, and they've been like, fine, whatever. Like, they're kind of angry at her. And then she finally goes home for Christmas in this book, which is the first time she's gone home for Christmas since book one.
Is it really?
And she,
nice.
Yeah. And she Good. Finally tells them everything. And that's tragic because 6 months later she has to erase their memories.
Yeah. But like, it breaks my heart that it's literally like, they have had such little time with her since like, in book two. And then, like, this book, she's, like, home for a week and a half. And then she's just like, I'm
going to Ron's for
I'm
six
to
and
Ron's,
a half.
Like, hang out with the boy that I fancy for, like, most of the summer when you've not seen me in, like, an entire year. Like, it's so cringeworthy. Because
well, I don't think that they're happy about her being away, but I think she is doing. She needs to be in amongst the fray.
She does. I mean, she does for the plot convenience of Harry not having to explain the same things twice.
Yeah,
but it's like the thing is like Ron is given so much backstory, and then like characters like Hermione are just given like nothing, and I just like. And even, I think it, because we, throughout the books, kind of get this thing of, like, Harry and Hermione almost being, like, brother and sister.
Yeah.
And I almost think that if you had included that the Grangers were awful, almost, like, abusive, toxic, neglectful parents, it would have strengthened that bond between them. Mm. But rather than actually using that as, like, a plot device to explain why Hermione was so absent to her parents, it's just like, oh, she's just, Yeah,
I always took umbrage with that aspect of
umbrage.
Yeah, there we go. With that relationship, because they seem so sweet and lovely and supportive.
They do.
And the idea that I don't know, perhaps there's she's got a little bit of shame about them, or you're completely right. It's a completely missed opportunity. The fact that she wasn't able to write in something a little edgier.
Yeah.
Or a little less condescending, I think, to the idea of these parents who are just nice supportive parents.
Yeah.
And it's a missed opportunity in book 7 where it's already one of my personal, like, saddest, most heart-wrenching moments when Hermione has to explain to Harry that she swiped her parents' memories. Mm. And it's horrible. But can you imagine how much more impactful that would have been if we had been even given the crumbs a fraction of, like, the backstory to Hermione's parents, the relationship with Hermione's parents.
And it would have strengthened her and Harry's relationship if it was like, okay, both of our like parental figures are shit. This is going to be something that we bond over. Versus Hermione just being like, oh yeah, I've ditched my parents yet again. We were supposed to go skiing. I've ditched them again. It makes no sense and also lacks any impact. It's
well,
just like,
but though, if I can counter that with a secondary thought there, if Hermione's parents had been awful caretakers like the Dursleys, then it would have been a bit of a sort of a double, you know, an overlap. And then secondly, that one moment where she has to wipe her lovely, sweet, kind of doting
quite
parents'
clueless.
Memories,
yeah.
Quite clueless.
Yeah.
Actually, that's a real source of pathos you would miss.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I do agree. I just...
You're saying that it would reinforce her character more rather than just kind of ignore her backstory.
Yeah.
Whereas Ron gets all the...
It's the lack of anything. It's like the fact that her parents just are these like really like passive, non-existent
characters. But I guess they're muggles.
She, like,
they're muggles
but
as well.
But they're
still like people. And it's like so many times she's supposed
people.
To go like... Steve.
Muggles are still people.
Guys, we are all still people.
Yeah, but like she's supposed...
This is the point of the story. We are all still humans.
Yeah. But like she's supposed to go skiing with them and she drops out and they're apparently just fine with that. And at this point she's like 13, 14 and
16.
You know, this point like in this, like she is there for like a week and a half. Like imagine if you went to boarding school and you went back to your parents for like a week and a half and then said, I'm going to go stay with this random guy.
I think sadly that's for people who go to public school education, that's kind of a lot of those people's lives are a bit like
Like trust me, like I used to work with a bunch of private school kids. I didn't go to private school, but like trust me, I know, but also like at least then that would be part of her character instead of
strengthening that she's completely without context. She's just a strong independent character.
If she
and
was
she,
a man,
and it should be called Hermione Granger. The series should be called Hermione
But I just it frustrates me that we get so much context of Harry and Ron and then it's just like Hermione, it's just like her parents, fuck their characters.
It is odd
you're not
how
wrong,
little
you're not
time
wrong.
They spend.
Yeah,
yeah.
They never get a line.
Yeah, for me, it's like a gendered thing where it's just like, because it's this female character that gets no backstory. If she was another like male character, I could forgive it more. But to me, it just comes across as like J.K. Rowling just being like, women don't need backstories. Like,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. Mm.
I think it's her like internalized like misogyny that she's just like, oh, it doesn't matter, like she's a woman, you know.
Mm.
yeah
but that aside, which I don't think I disagree with you, I think it is quite powerful that she is just Hermione,
yeah,
and she's the fixer and she's there cleaning up all these clueless boys' yeah. mess the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah.
No one seems to know anything about
I do Hermione that Hermione is just like, I am the best yeah. and you are all trash.
Yeah. Yeah. I do agree. Like, it's, you know, Hermione is one of my all-time favourite characters. And that's part of it, because, like, growing up, you, as, like, like, bossy 12-year-old, you're just like, who am I going to look up to?
It's Hermione. It's Hermione. Yeah,
of course. Yeah.
But it's only when you get older that you're just like, should she have been dealing with all of that as like a 14-year-old? Like, yeah. Yeah.
I also think another aspect of not addressing her parents, which is quite useful and an interesting parallel with a lot of storytelling where you leave out anything that isn't to do with the exact world you're writing for. The Dursleys are incredibly two-dimensional and awful. And you don't, after the first few books, you don't really spend any time with them. And I like that you don't spend any time with Hermione's parents, because this is about the magical. This is about yeah. the Wizarding world.
It's yeah. true. They are muggles. They're muggles. They literally yeah. like
they have you, no.
Part at what of time do muggles have a three-dimensional part in this story?
No.
Yeah.
Really, throughout it's there are very few.
So the yeah. Yeah. Have, and a good parallel there is with the Sopranos. I don't know how. Well, you know that, but the Sopranos.
Not at all.
Okay, but no, actually, no, don't do it again.
No, but just quickly, the gangsters are all anyone involved in the world of gangsters in the Sopranos are beautifully written three-dimensional characters. And if you're not a part of the Italian mafia family, you are this sort of suburban,
yeah.
boring middle class, very two-dimensional, awful, yeah. hardly yeah. written character. Yeah. And it's kind of almost like an artist sort of sketching the background deliberately yeah. thinly in order for the main ingredients
yeah. to yeah, I do. I totally agree with you.
I wrote down soup bread because Charlie's going to make a joke about this. I love soup. Don't make a joke about it.
I actually hadn't had that as a note, but yes, I almost called you actually Hermione there. Hannah loves soup, but also I did have a note about like Harry's like just somehow lack of ability to wait for food to cool down.
I know.
He's like, my
he always
throat
burns his mouth.
He's like, my throat is burning. It's like,
boy, just wait till your fucking food.
Just blow on it.
Yeah, yeah. You're literally a wizard. Like,
yeah.
Stop burning your mouth, you silly bollocks.
Yeah, he's just like, oh, and then she asked me a question, but like, I already had the like lava hot soup down my throat. It's like, blow on it, you absolute we have a running joke throughout the podcast that Harry is a dumb bitch to the point that's on our merchandise, because yeah.
Harry is a basic child.
Yeah. He's so dumb.
But that's why she wrote him as a blank. She wrote him as a completely blank.
Yeah,
vehicle,
yeah, yeah. He's
she?
you put yourself
so you
in
put
him.
Yourself in. Yeah,
including
yeah.
yes, absolutely. All sometimes the time I swallow soup in. And I'm like, that was
my throat is burning. But Mrs. Weasley is like, Harry's throat burning is a great opportunity for him to tell him about the promotion my husband has got. Yeah. Which led me to think that no one has asked her about her life.
Know,
and it's very clear that no one has ever said, Molly, how are you? How's your life?
Yeah.
Because she literally waits for Harry's throat to be burning when she's like, Arthur's yeah. got a promotion.
But she's also like, she does it brilliantly because she clearly wants to gossip about Slughorn, which like giant yeah. mood. She's like, what do you think about Slughorn? Yeah, me too.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, he's kind of a bit of a weird character, isn't she? Isn't he? Oh, and also, like, yeah. yeah, whilst you're swallowing that soup, Mr.
My husband got a promotion.
Like, yeah, it's so
can
well
we
done.
Onion soup.
French onion soup.
But everyone's digging so hard on it.
No, onion but like, soup. Honestly, I read
when,
the chapter
when Arthur
just
gets
like,
in,
I...
it's like, ooh, onion soup. Everyone's really jazzed about the onion soup.
I live and
really
die
boring.
For onions, raw onions, cooked onions. I don't care how onions are. I'm an onion gal.
I would agree. Okay. Onions are more of an accompaniment than the main deal.
No. For me,
onion soup
anything
tastes
of onion,
I will.
Onion soup.
It is a classic. Yeah. I think that people are going like, they're getting really enthusiastic about this onion soup. Yeah.
I feel like you Googled before you came here, like, onion soup.
I'm vaguely aware of onion soup.
Yeah.
Mr. Weasley's been promoted.
Yeah.
What's his new position? Does anyone remember his new position?
Head of the... It's to do with...
Yeah.
Magic being misused.
You just looked at your nose. Hannah's not allowed to talk.
Misuse of magical artifacts.
Well, no, that's his original
yeah,
job.
It's misuse of dark object. I don't remember.
It's not a catchy job title.
No.
However...
Nick, can you remember?
No, can I know? I was actually trying.
interesting.
I was trying to remember last night when I heard it. I was like, I was listening to the podcast and I was like, I'm going to remember that. Gone.
It's gone.
Is that uncatchy?
Yeah.
It's not a big... Also, Will and I were talking earlier about how shit Mr. Weasley's muggle knowledge is. Like, the fact that his...
Oh, we actually talked about it for so long that we suddenly were like, oh, hold on.
We've got to save this.
We're talking about this.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we've got it all
this
out.
This is what you... Like, you kept like, arriving... You arrived and you were like, stop talking about that. We need to talk about it on the mics.
Yeah, we need to save up.
And then the mics start rolling. We just start talking about sort of...
Life.
Misgendering things. And, you know, we need to be talking about how Arthur cannot, for some reason, figure out anything to do with the science of... How human, like how muggles have figured out.
I mean, his entire job is like, muggles.
Yeah.
And he still doesn't know how to say electricity or policeman. And the guy obviously doesn't know shit.
Okay. Well, the reason this came up was because
what is his
code word in this chapter for coming, or his password or whatever for Molly is. His life's work is how aeroplanes stay up.
Okay, do you know how aeroplanes stay up?
I don't.
Well, aerodynamics.
That's bad.
That's a very good point because I don't know how aerodynamics.
Okay. Exactly. Well, okay. We could Google it. We could go to the library and get a textbook. We could give a nice, between the four of us, we could work it out.
If this was our life work, which it is his, muggles,
then
you would have figured it out.
Given that Wikipedia is a thing.
He's made a car fly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, man's not put him on BT yet. Like, if he just knew that Google, even Bing was the thing, he would be fine. But I did actually have a semi-intelligent point to make about
you
this.
You? And
so essentially, Mr. Weasley's new job is about finding muggle artifacts that have been, or not even muggle artifacts, just artifacts that have been made to be more magical than they are. You know, various protective things that are not actually that protective.
Amulets, the like.
As if, you know, in a global pandemic, people would start selling PPE that actually didn't work.
Shebang!
The many ways in which this book we can relate back to the actual global pandemic that we are currently going through. But yeah, so they're essentially saying these things. Oh, this charm will protect you from COVID. Oh, sorry. I mean the Death Eaters. And it's genuinely, as flawed as J.K. Rowling is, she's a horrific human being. But the fact that she essentially predicted this, that humanity is that vile... That they would start selling,
profiteering off.
Profiteering off.
Of people's fear, yeah. But that's the reality. When horror comes, people start profiteering off it, and that's why the country is fucked. £4.2 billion to random people who don't make PPE.
Yeah.
Let's give them money. Why don't we do that? That's a good idea.
This is on your next album. Yeah.
This is the new song. It's called.
Yeah.
PPE.
So this is the stage in which we finished making a record, and now we're building. You know, this is from the ground up,
and this is
where it begins.
Yeah. You've gone past acoustics podcast. To just full just making up as you go along.
Yeah, making up Harry Potter weird. Yeah.
But these are the whispers of the next record.
Yeah.
It's just slightly bothered me always. His lack of it, or any wizard's lack of ability to get their head round
muggle clothing, just
the idea of science being you wouldn't. I mean, why wouldn't you be absolutely fascinated as to why these poor creatures that don't possess the power of magic, how they've managed to do these wonderful magical things?
Yeah,
you'd think you'd want to wrap your head around that.
Yeah,
to be honest, since the books have been written, I think human technology, muggle technology, has probably overtaken a lot of the things.
Yeah.
We literally have got iPhones.
Yeah, she wrote it.
We've got, I think, find Web 3 now.
She wrote it in... Ow, sorry. She wrote it in an age where, muggle technology was just at the cusp of overtaking what wizards could actually realistically do with magic, or, the same level.
Well, so you're going to say Avada Kedavra to kill someone.
Make it snappier.
It's quite a mouthful.
Yeah, just make it
pull
a trigger.
You just pull
the fucking
Voldemort,
trigger.
Get better at your job.
Die.
I read something about someone wrote the other day about how Avada Kedavra was... How Abracadabra is something that people over the years have misheard. That's why she made Avada Kedavra, is that like the Muggles have misheard people saying Avada Kedavra, like, and made Abracadabra is like this childish thing.
Why is it so close? But that's
kind of a cool idea.
No, she's not done. That's beautiful.
Isn't that cool? The Muggles have heard
people saying
as if like people are dying on that regular thing, like this that often they're abracadabraing that the Muggles are going abracadabra, like
that's kind of cool, I kind of like a mishearing of the
so that's the one spell that they mishear. It's not Expelliarmus, it's not
yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, because the only spell that you would stupefy. Dare to do in front of a Muggle is killing someone else. I kind of like that.
And then how do they get away if Harry's the one that survives it?
Oh, no, I mean, Avada Kedavra, we're talking, you know,
in centuries into
the
past.
Yeah, we're talking, like, centuries into the past. Like, that's
nothing
why
to do with Harry.
Abracadabra is, like, something that's been built into, like...
I get that. I like that.
It's kind
of a cool idea.
I think it's beautiful.
Yeah, I really like that.
Fine.
All right, guys, and that is where we are going to cut it off with flight. This audio file we recorded for nearly 4 hours, and this is about halfway through us chatting, and this episode is already at an hour 10, so I think that is a good place to stop, and we will do the second half of this chapter in the following episode, which will be in 2 weeks' time. All Flight's links will be below to their music and their social media pages if you want to check them out, which we would really recommend. As we said, we love their music and they're clearly big Harry Potter fans. Like, listen to the points they made in this. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Sorry we're splitting a chapter in two, but you guys always say you love it when we go into depth and tangents. So here is a hell of a lot of that. Now into the normal outro.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Goblet of Wine. To find us on social media, search at Goblet of Wine Pod on Twitter or at Goblet of Wine Podcast on Instagram.
We also have a website over at www.gobletofwine.co.uk where you can keep up with everything that we do.
This podcast is produced by our wonderful Hufflepuff tier patrons.
Yolanda, Wes, Samuel, Nick, Lewis, Layla, Catherine, Gillian, Becca, Ashley, Amelie, and Alexia.
If you'd like to support this podcast, check out our Goblet of Wine Patreon, where you can also gain access to bonus episodes, behind the scenes content, and our Discord.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode, and we'll see you in the next one.
Bye!